Welcome everyone to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. Today, I have the honors of interviewing a special local champion doing wonderful things in Palm Beach County, Char Talmadge. Char is the executive director of Rescue Upstream, an anti-human trafficking nonprofit that focuses on sexual abuse prevention, training, public awareness, and direct outreach to victims. She leads the initiative to create a comprehensive vetting system to engage community professionals for pro bono victim services in Palm Beach County. Char also serves on the advisory board for 24/7, a leading Florida survivor-led anti-human trafficking organization focused on technology solutions for rescue and reporting. Char draws on 30 years in organizational leadership and operational development, connecting businesses to best practices and people solutions within the commercial and healthcare staffing industries. She served on the Healthcare Policy Council for the American Staffing Association and has spoken on healthcare staffing solutions at the National Healthcare Staffing Summit and other corporate conferences. Her passion is the development of collaborative and broad-based solutions that positively impact the issue of human trafficking here in South Florida. So welcome to the podcast for the first time, Char.
Thank you so much, Jessica. It is an honor to be here.
Aww, thanks. And before we dive into all the deep stuff, I know that you're someone who really enjoys traveling. So I was wondering, what has been your favorite continent or country to travel in and why?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I have been blessed immeasurably, and I've traveled all over the world. And I thought about this question. And so I had an opportunity to go to Ephesus.
Ephesus.
Everybody that's familiar with the Bible understands what happened and the value of Ephesus. Well, it is modern day Selkuk is what it is, and it is in Turkey. And when I went there, I wasn't a believer. I went a long time ago, and my degree is in ancient studies archaeology.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was going from very much a historical perspective, right? And so, and it's yes. An amazing place. You actually do feel like you're walking through antiquities, an entire city. So we were walking through, and at one point we stopped, and the guide pointed down to, you know, the marble that we were walking on and said, "See that formation there?" Which was, of course, a symbol of a fish.
And oh, wow.
That is evidence of an early encounter when clearly Christians would come into a town, they'd mark half of the symbol. And then when another group would come in, they would mark the other half, and that would be how that they would meet. And as early.
Wow, I didn't know.
And I was like, wow, that is so incredible. I'm walking today and I'm seeing evidence. And of course I wasn't
a believer,
and of course now I am. So it's just so powerful.
That's amazing.
To have been there and see the evidence of that. And I also was blessed to go to the island of Patmos.
Oh my gosh. Stop.
John wrote the book of Revelation.
Yes.
So I was not a believer, but walking through there, I've never felt anything like that before. There was a lot of monks or people traveling from all over the world to walk through this very small space. It was such a peaceful but kind of heavy feeling.
Yeah.
And of course, now in retrospect, I'm like, wow, he was laying on that when I saw where he was laying and he wrote
no
the book.
No way. So, that's so cool.
Yeah. So I didn't even know it then. You know, I was pursuing history, right?
Yeah.
I was pursuing history. I wasn't pursuing the Lord. And I just was able to see that. And now I've just made that connection. So anyways.
No, that's amazing. And the funny thing is that his story, I've heard some people say it's his story.
Yeah.
So I love that. And the first place you went to, that part of the Bible, which one is, in reference to what story is that from, what location?
he wrote
in Turkey.
In Turkey, in Ephesus. Yeah, that's Ephesus. Where Paul wrote letters. And
is that the prison? Is that where he was in prison?
I don't know. I don't know that. I'd have to. I'm sorry, I don't have that detail.
No, you're good. You're good.
I just know there, you know, there was a lot of communication, a lot of travel. And of course, that was a key part for expansion of Christianity.
I'm emotional now. Like, I want to cry because that's so cool. Like, I think a lot of people don't, like, at least for me growing up, if I was reading the Bible, I don't equate it to, like, it's right there, you can visit, or, like, you know, mm-hmm. it's across the world, but it's a physical location, you know?
Yeah.
It's
and,
so
and in the
cool.
middle of it, right, all these archaeological ruins, to see, like, the markings of the beginning of Christianity, you know, that's, and some method insane. That they used to connect with each other as they traveled into these towns. It was just
beautiful.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That's awesome. So we're going to dive into the, and I wasn't, you know, the funny thing is I wasn't expecting that. I thought you were going to say, like, I saw this river or waterfall in Asia and the mountains and it was beautiful. Cause that's like what I think picture when people are like, I traveled the world. All I picture is like Asia, the huge mountains and like the beaches that people always talk about. But I love that it's like, no, it's like Turkey, Patmos. That to me, I'm like, oh, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm blessed, that's for sure.
Yes, that's such a blessing. And I want to talk to you about your studies one day. That's awesome. So as I said a little earlier, you are with Rescue Upstream. Could you tell us about different activities that Rescue Upstream, the nonprofit, they're involved in? And like, for example, I know they do outreaches to survivors as well.
Sure. So we launched in 2013. We were actually a ministry of Journey Church. Some of our listeners may be familiar. They have a campus in Lake Worth and in Boynton Beach. And in 2020, we separated as an independent charity and then moved into our nonprofit status. So we have always had, you know, at the origination, our founder really had a burden for the issue of child sexual abuse, because when you look at human trafficking, the common thread of vulnerability is prior child sexual abuse. So very early on, we knew that was going to be part of what our mission field was, which is just really educating people about how to prevent it, right?
Wow,
whether
yeah.
you're an employer and you have people caring for students and youth, or you're caring for your own children or your grandchildren, it is not stranger danger. It's absolutely not. And there's so many families that are broken and single parents that the vulnerability is even greater because the need is so mm-hmm. tremendous. You need yeah. a village, right? We all need a village.
Yeah.
You better vet your village. So early on, we knew that was going to be a part of it. So we do virtual and in-person training called Stewards of Children. It's training from darkness to light. And it's actually a 2.5-hour course. If you're a medical professional, mm-hmm. there's CEUs associated with it. And we would welcome an opportunity to train anyone on that. Secondly, and I think it was kind of part of the bio that you covered, we take an active role in engaging the community to come in to be a service provider for victims of human trafficking and those coming out of sexual exploitation. And I think we'll talk about a little bit later about like what that would look like. But that is part of what we do. And then the balance of our focus, which is the majority of what we do, is outreach. Mm-hmm. So we have been blessed. We work with a partner, a survivor partner, Lena Thompson. She is the founder of 24/7. She created this amazing QR code that allows you, once you scan the code, to either get more information about human trafficking or, most importantly, report it. Mm. Report for help if you're a victim, or report if you suspect you're seeing something. And it's so many of you that are listening to this will say, oh yeah, you know, I'm at the airport and I see the signs in the bathrooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Human trafficking, 1-888-373-7888, you know, report to the Polaris number, and it's in maybe 2 or 3 languages. Mm-hmm. We know we have just a tremendous variety of victims here in South Florida, in the state of Florida.
Yes.
So this code has been translated into 10 languages.
Wow.
So the code has been put on a sticker. And what we do at Rescue Upstream is we raised our hand and said, you know what? We can get these stickers posted in women's bathrooms all over the county. So we monthly go out as part of our outreach and we engage the community. We meet businesses. We educate them on human trafficking. And we ask them to put the QR code sticker in the women's bathrooms. So we have roughly 400 of them posted. I can tell you already this year, we had 20 victim reports to Polaris. Wow. Again, Polaris manages the National Human Trafficking Hotline number. So that's a segment of what we do. And the other two areas of outreach are directly to those in the life of prostitution. And one thing I just want to really clarify is you cannot address the issue of human trafficking without addressing the issue of prostitution. Mm-hmm. So our heartbeat that God gave us is for all women in sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. But we are also part of the Human Trafficking Task Force, whereby if we have a qualified victim of human trafficking under force, fraud, and coercion, which is the definition, we can access those partner relationships and resources. So how do we find these people, right? Mm-hmm. Two ways. So one way is literally going out on the streets. So we work with three different groups of law enforcement in Palm Beach County because they all have jurisdictions. And we go out in the evening and we have been blessed. And this is a great way to gift our ministry or get involved in a service project. Yeah. We gift hygiene bags. Oh, so nice. We go out with full hygiene bags. We go out with brand new shoes, sneakers, socks. And with undercover police, we actually approach the women who are on the street. Okay. So that is a segment of our potential audience we're trying to reach, right? There are some people that are being trafficked or selling for survival that are on the street, and they may not be advertising online, which is where the majority of the trafficking is occurring. So we know we have to go on the street to get to them, right? Yes. So, and so we take out our bags, we pray with them. We meet an immediate need. We may take them for a meal and we leave follow-up information. Depending on where we are in the county, we may refer them to some of our other partners, right? Mm-hmm. For hygiene, our food supplies, clothing, a lot of different resources, depending on where we are in the county. But it's essentially building the relationship with them, right? Mm-hmm. And letting them know, hey, you're not just a lost soul walking out here. Not only do we care about you, but there's a God and he loves you. And he loves you like you are. That's the main message. Like, doesn't matter what you've done, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter. He loves you. And so that is a key part of what we do. We'll be going out for Christmas. We go out throughout the year with our hygiene bags. At Christmas, though, we want to make it special. So we have Christmas cards in there. We have beauty bags. So we just had a blessing. We've had several people donate really nice cosmetics. And one of our local skilled nursing facilities wanted to do a service project for us. And they have an assembly line set up and they are going to be populating these fabulous beauty bags.
Amazing.
And hang on it. I am a masterpiece, right?
Oh my gosh.
That is the message that we want to give these women, right? They are a masterpiece. They may not feel it, look it, but that's who they are. And so we'll be taking that out. We'll probably put in there some gift cards, maybe Dunkin' Donuts. You know, everybody likes some Java and a piece of jewelry. I think we've got some donations for that. So that's part of what we do for outreach. The other area of outreach, as I kind of alluded to, especially since the pandemic, a lot of the activities moved online. And so early on, I'm going to say maybe about 7 years ago, a small group of us started doing internet outreach in the Miami market. Because one thing, just to back up, these girls are moved across the counties. They're from Treasure Coast, Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade. So, and so our partners, you know, we engage with partners across the Tri-County area.
Our listeners who are potentially out of the state, what counties are you talking about when you say Tri-County?
Actually it's more than Tri-County. So Treasure Coast is north of Palm Beach County, Martin, St. Lucie counties, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have Palm Beach County. Just south of us, you have Broward County, and then you have Miami-Dade County.
Yes.
So
Five so counties.
Yes, essentially. Yeah, all very active with great task force and coalitions and improving collaboration, you know, year by year. So really good. So we started going in and going onto the website, and we'd actually become fake buyers. We'd go onto the sites, be fake buyers. That's very, very dark and difficult work.
That sounds very, I'm sure you see a lot that you have to try to forget that you see.
Yes. And so we started researching, you know, there's got to be a better way to reach these people that are online. And sure enough, there was.
And when you go online, what is it that you're seeing? Because I know that we know, but some people are like, what are you guys talking about? You can buy people online?
That's great. Yeah. So we're going to essentially escort sites, and they're basically pornographic images. They could be live feeds. They can be videos. And it's really anything that you want. You can be men seeking men, women seeking women. The majority of the sex trafficking that men are trafficked to. We're not going through statistics today, but there is a percentage of men. I think in the state of Florida, the data from 2020 was 7%. That was 2020, and I'm sure it's increased. But the majority of trafficking, sex trafficking victims are females. So we are going into sites that, and we are men looking for women. So we determined that there was a better way to do this by working with technology partners that instead of having to go on and see all those images, they were allowed to use technology to scrape and pull those phone numbers. Because that's essentially all we need. Yeah. We just need the phone number so that we can reach out to the girl or the woman. And so we found something. And so now, you know, before on a good night, if we talked to five people or seven people, it was amazing. Now we can ping a zip code, define a 50-mile radius, name six escort sites, and then send the scraper out and get 300 hits and 300 phone numbers. And that creates a CVS file that we can then text to. So we have an opportunity to do a mass text to these ladies.
Wow. So you just laid out everything Rescue Upstream is doing, which is amazing. There's a lot of community work. There's a lot of direct outreach to survivors, victims, people who are still, you know, feeling, as you mentioned, like they're alone, especially on the street. No one, you know, I think society sometimes abandons people to the, well, America has a little bit of like a less community-based attitude towards someone who's, you know, financially in need or in, not just that, but in the lifestyle, there's a lot of strong things that we have to break from the past of how this person got on the street, you know, because there's that stops a lot of people from wanting to, you know, being bold enough to be like, hey, like, let me, you know, donate this, you know, like what you guys are going to do for Christmas. So a lot of people tend to think, or what have you found potentially like the pushback might be when it comes to talking about this group of people that sometimes are outcasted in society for centuries? That's like the number they, you know, it's prostitution. They're like, well, she wants to be there. She's doing it. She's used to it.
It's so good. And you're spot on. And the first barrier is it's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so what I like to say, and I'm going to say this to the audience right now. If you're sitting in a room with 5-10-year-old girls and you go around and you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Does any of them say they want to be a stripper, a porn star, or a prostitute? No. It is not a choice. I'm going to say that again. It is not a choice. It is essentially the exploitation of vulnerability or multiple vulnerabilities. So I'm going to say that is my first point. And hopefully that will change a heart out there. And then secondly, I'm going to say data in human trafficking is complicated. There's a lot of different entities tracking data. So you don't always get the exact same answer, but I will tell you this, depending on the source, when the question is asked, what's the average age of entree into prostitution? You'll get anything from 12 to 14 years of age to 14 to 16 to 16 to 17. Average age of entry into prostitution. Now, is that a choice?
No.
So I just really encourage people to realize, so once you get into that life, it's very hard to get out, because then you do become ostracized. You are. And couple that with the pornography pandemic in this country.
100%.
And the if there wasn't demand, we wouldn't have all these people being trafficked or selling, correct? So if the demand is great, has the demand hit our community? Has the issue of somebody buying hit a family? Has that created marital strife? Has that broken apart a family? Yes. So the pain of that, that people experience, is another reason to say, well, you know, I forgave him. I needed to forgive him, right? Or the scenario, she's the problem.
100%.
Right? Right. So that's.
But we're also like trained, right? With the movies that we've seen, like, oh, he's cheating. And, you know, she, you know, it's the woman that's bad. And it's like, we could also say, hold on, you know, what caused her to be in this situation to begin with? And I think it does take a lot of empathy, but it's also takes a lot of tearing down so much misinformation that we built up about this person in our heads. Because we do that even outside of, you know, human trafficking. We do that with the like homeless population. We're like, oh, well, like they must be on drugs. That's a common one. And when it comes to the community aspect, I love that you guys are partnering so much. You mentioned like you're the nurses are going to get together and do something. How has that looked when it comes to reaching out? Is it difficult? Is it hard? Is it like baby steps? Because I assume if there's like for the stickers, for example, if you're going to, you guys are doing weekly outreaches, does it take time to get them to kind of understand that how important this is just to put the sticker up?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Our greatest challenge, and praise the Lord, we have people on our team that are that speak Spanish here because we're in South Florida. I know people could be listening from all over. We have a large Hispanic community, and so communicating, you know. So we love the fact that the QR code, once we understand what their language is, it's translated in 10 languages, we can show them the actual code. They can put their language in, and then they can understand what we're talking about.
Got it.
Community that is not, you know, able to understand English, but I have to tell you, overall, the response has been tremendous. People know it's happening. They see it's happening. Some people have told us examples of
really
stories. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's really been amazing. There's a small percentage that either we could not break that communication barrier, or they just had a fear factor. Or they just didn't want to participate, that said, no, we don't want to put up. But
have you ever,
he's been responsive.
Have you ever had anyone kind of call you guys and say, hey, we might be like, anyone change their mind
about taking the sticker down?
No, taking the sticker, like putting it up.
Oh, no, because really most of them do. It's really... That's it's awesome. Really incredible. The only challenge we have is in the corporations. Like, you have a manager that's running a space, a retail space, right? Because we're in retail, we're in restaurants, we're in gas stations, everything.
Hotels,
yeah, everything. So sometimes the management needs to give approval. So we understand that, you know, we understand that. In that case, we're leaving our information and you know, leaving a code and they make the decision. But in many cases, we're able to go ahead and put it in.
Have you guys ever brought this out of the state as well, like nationally?
So this product is owned by Lena Thompson from 24/7. We partner with her in Palm Beach County. There's another group that partners with her in Broward. There's somebody in Miami. And yes, this is an international tool. This QR code is being put into airports in Houston. It's in play. And I can't even speak to it. I can't tell you what other countries she's in.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
This is a global initiative. It supports the world. Because when you scan it, the first thing you see is what language you speak. And then you see the world. And then you click on where are you in the world.
Oh, wow.
And then when you get to the United States, you have all the states and you click on a state. If you're not in the United States, you see images of flags. Mm-hmm. Now, why do you do that? Because a lot of the girls are trafficked across countries and they don't really know where they are. Mm-hmm. But they could know the flag. They recognize the flag because they see it. So I thought that was brilliant on her part to do that.
That is brilliant. Have you guys experienced, so the funny thing is that some people might be asking themselves, like, wait, so there's girls that are trafficked who are in public places? What do you have to share about that? Because I think when we think about trafficking, a lot of times people think taken, like, oh, you know, she's locked in a room. And that's 100% happening as well. You know, there are people who are locked in a basement or in an attic. So for the ones who are 11, 12, 13, 16, 20, 21, who are actually like going to get their nails done, going to visit the doctor, going to the dentist, you know, or, you know, going to, for an annual checkup, you know, what can you just kind of lean us into how it is possible that that's even happening and people don't even know what's happening to them?
Yeah. You know, that's great. That's all about awareness, public awareness, and public awareness that's and training that's specific to an individual's lane, right? Mm-hmm. So the Palm Beach County Human Trafficking Coalition, they do an excellent job of training our students in the schools. Like they're in all the high schools. So that's getting people an awareness, a practical awareness, students, counselors, what to look for in the school, because there's people trafficking and grooming in the high schools. Okay. Then you've got those that are certified to train the medical professionals. It's now mandated. Mm. Your medical professionals have mandated CEUs in human trafficking. So what you're looking for that you might see if you're a dentist, right? Versus a GYN doctor, right? Mm-hmm. And then another avenue would be hotel training. So hotel training is, some hotels are really far along with this. And I don't want to misquote. I'm thinking of one in particular that's done a fabulous job, but they're training their staff because trafficking happens in hotels. Mm-hmm. So as each segment or sector of the businesses get training that's specific to them, they're going to understand how to report. I'll give you a perfect example. So we're in Palm Beach County. And in August, some of you on this podcast might have heard this. In August, there's a motel called the Lagos Motel, Motor Inn, in Lake Worth. One of the staff members had some training on human trafficking. So when he saw a young girl come in with somebody older and he noticed how their engagement was, he suspected something and he reported it. And you know what? That girl was being trafficked.
Wow.
Jupiter all the way down to Fort Lauderdale. She's 17 years old.
Wow.
Yes. And it's because that hotel worker suspected something and made the call. So it is changing. It will evolve. It does require boldness, right?
100%.
You know, if you see something, say something, you know, that's the way we should be anyways, right? We should be about justice, right? And protecting those that are vulnerable. So to answer your question, you know, it's training. It's training and awareness in the specific areas where you're working, you know, so you know what to be looking for.
I love that. And I love that the nurses are, you know, the hospitals are doing it. They're requiring that training. I do have a friend that's a nurse. So she even sent me like that's a picture of the training, like, hey, I'm in a human trafficking class right now. So it is wonderful that it's happening. I feel like we still have so much work to do on that level. Because it's one of these crimes that is so hard for the human mind to comprehend that it's happening. Because you're like, who would want to do that to someone? But it's something that is so disheartening. And the fact that it's happening to minors, it's just really hard to sit with. And, you know, there's parents listening as well to the podcast, you know, who have young children. How do you think that kind of relationship, like you mentioned that you guys really, one of the legs of the nonprofit is prevention when it comes to sexual abuse. So it's how do you talk to a parent who is not really interested in having that conversation with their children? Or, you know, what does that conversation look like when it, because there's some parents who don't even want to talk about sex with their kids. So it's, you know, people get really funny with it. It just depends on the culture too. You know, some cultures are very, very conservative and they're like, hey, we don't talk about that. That's for an adult conversation. However, there's grooming that can happen to kids that are 5, 6, you know, like the grooming, you know, the criminals, they don't play fair. They will tell that child to, you know, hey, keep this between us, you know, like this is a secret, or if you say anything, you're going to ruin your whole family. Like, you know, they really put that fear, that shame into the child so that the child doesn't say anything. So what is an encouragement that you have seen when it comes to just getting parents to realize that conversations like this, not just one time, but consistently doing it is so important?
Yes, it is. You've said a lot, and I'm taking notes because I don't want to miss some points that you brought up. The first thing when we talk about family, I need to say this. When you look at statistics, 30% from 2021 has considered familial trafficking. Mm. So this makes it very complicated. So what I'm saying is there are family members, maybe not immediate, but extended, somebody related to in the family that is actually exploiting the child or the youth.
And that could be like an uncle, an aunt, a cousin.
Yes. And to your point, under force or coercion, saying you're not going to say anything. So it's so closely linked to sexual abuse, but then it turns into being exploitation and forcing them to have it, you know, have sex with somebody else. So I think that's something, again, that's just deep and dark and is so full of shame. So it's so important that we teach our young people at a very young age, because I think it's a misnomer. I think, you know, parenting now, which is different than when I raised my son is now 26.
You raise a millennial.
They're exposed to everything at a very young age. Some people are saying 9, 10, certainly by 12, pornography, they're being approached. The explosion of the internet, although it has some wonderful benefits, has just put an entire generation at risk. So you have to talk to your child about boundaries. So I'd say simply, even for those that are conservative and just struggling with this topic, you have to sit down and define what's good touching, what's bad touching, and what those boundaries are. And then no matter what, so that's one, what's good, what's bad, what's on, you know, what's appropriate, what's not. Two, there's nothing you can't tell me, my son, my daughter. There's nothing you can't tell me. Right? That's number two. And then number three is, if you don't know the person, if he's not in your class or she's not in your class, or you didn't meet her because she's at the, you know, the neighborhood pool, mm-hmm. or you're playing softball with her, or he's on your soccer team, do not friend them. Mm. And I know we're talking about human trafficking, but I have to bring this up because there is another thing happening right now that's at such a tremendous rapid rate that targets not only females, but males. Mm. And it's called sextortion.
Yes. Go ahead.
And I want to encourage everyone on this podcast to Google sextortion. There's a fabulous documentary. We actually hosted an event at Palm Beach State College last year and showed this. And it's a story of a case of a young boy and how it all happened. But essentially, you have to know this. Your kids cannot discern what's real or not real on the internet. The amount of artificial intelligence out there is tremendous. And the fact is, there are people outside of this country that are targeting our young people. They use all of the AI out there. And that young person thinks, certainly it's the girl at the next school district. Yeah. Certainly it's friend. Why? Because they know what teams you're on. Where do you go? They know about your family. They know all of this. And I'll tell you an example. I was actually at a doctor's appointment. I was meeting with them, talking to them about coming on to offer free services. And he looked at me and said, I have to tell you this. I have a friend whose 16-year-old son just disclosed to his father that some girlfriend, he thought it was his girlfriend.
Wow.
You know, he built a relationship. It was a grooming period for a 100%. While.
They and wait. They have patience.
They have very patient. Mm-hmm. And of course he did something inappropriate. He sent a picture that exposed him, right? In a matter of 5 minutes, they demanded $400. And the young man somehow got $400 and sent it to them. And then they demanded $1,000.
Oh my gosh.
He was so distraught and he went shame-filled to his father and said, I have to tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
That story is happening all over. So going back to how do we gauge our kids? If you go to sextortion, they have three little vignettes that are kind of like animated that are appropriate. I think the age appropriate is 13 years of age.
Okay.
You can show that and just have a conversation. This is about money. So I'm going to go back to what you were talking about before.
Yes.
Comment, like, why would somebody do that? Mm-hmm. Don't let anybody be confused here. The buyer, it's about sex. Mm. Trafficker, the exploiter, the sextortion, it's about money. Why? You can sell cocaine once. You can sell a girl 10 times a day. This is about money. So you need to educate your kids. And the sextortion is put together so well that young people can really relate to it. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, just challenge them. Challenge them to be an investigator, right? Mm-hmm. Challenge them to how do you know that person, right? And I think it'll help a lot. It'll open up the conversation.
And maybe I've always even thought about safety tips like for children in elementary school, so like 10 and younger. Where they're just learning about liking someone, you know, like, or like, oh, I have this crush, and just learning about like healthy relationships. But, you know, the thing is that human trafficking can happen regardless of your, the family's economic status. Cause I think that's a thing that people are like, oh, well, it's not going to happen to my family or my child because, you know, we live in this fancy gated community. There's no way, you know, it's going to get to my house. But then your child's on, you know, playing a game system or, you know, in a group chat or wherever, meeting all these strangers who, you know, I saw this video and they're like, you would never, you know, if a 40-year-old man knocks on your door, you wouldn't let him in and go play with your child.
Right.
With your 9-year-old in the room and close the door. So
right.
It's the same thing with people online. You as the parent, you know, I know a lot of parents want to provide that privacy for their child or, you know, they want to be cool. They want to respect that their child, but you're the authority in the house, and you need to know who your child's talking to online, you know, because anyone has access to them at this point with the internet.
Yes. And I'm going to challenge the parents right now. How are you modeling how you use social media? Do you know everybody that you're friends with on Instagram? What kind of pictures are you putting out there? You know, it's so much more what we do and not what we say. So I just encourage everybody to think about, how am I modeling my use of social media and engagement with people that are, you know, coming into my life one way or another?
Yeah, it's so, so important. And so the training that you guys do, they can just go on the website and request a training for Darkness to Light, or yes, how does it work?
Yep. So our website's www.rescueupstream.org. And you can just, right there, there's a link. It talks about Stewards of Children, and you can send a request. Again, we do it in person. We do online trainings. You could get a group in your neighborhood. You could get five other parents and set up an online training. Whatever you want to do. You know, if you're a church organization and you want to get your youth group and your children's ministry team trained, you know, we could come to you. We also offer it in English and Spanish.
Oh, nice. Okay. South Florida. Just screams South Florida. I love that. So I know you were briefly diving into just the outreach with the survivors. And I know that you guys also connect survivors, like if they do want to transition, how does that look, and what kind of needs have you seen that a survivor urgently needs when they are thinking like, hey, I do need help?
Yeah. So the needs are super comprehensive. I'm going to say the majority of, and again, our primary focus, even though the QR code is available to help any kind of victim of trafficking, labor, or sex, our primary focus is domestic sex trafficking.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
The majority of the ladies we work with have an immediate need for drug rehabilitation. As you can imagine, it's very difficult to live that life and not be able to block it. So our most urgent need is an ability to get them into a rehab and get them stabilized. Not always, but most of the time. So we're always looking for partners. And again, these people very few of them have any insurance. Very few of them have any ID. They don't have a driver's license. They don't have a social security card. They have nothing.
Wow. Nothing.
So we're always.
And is that because? Is that because, what's the typical reason as to why they might not be carrying that information?
Well, if there's a trafficker involved, they've taken that from them. They don't let them have their own ID. They take that from them. And if there's somebody that's being trafficked through, let's say, a Romeo pimp, there's lots of different types of traffickers. A lot of what we see is the Romeo pimp. They may be also living on the streets or just jumping from one place or another. So a lot of times things get stolen repeatedly.
Got it.
It's the same with our homeless population. So there's an immediate need for drug rehabilitation. There's an immediate need for good and also obviously medical assessment. It's determining, you know, what kind of medical needs, mental health needs. Do they need medication for some of the mental health needs? And then also trauma-informed therapy. So that kind of goes hand in hand. You have to start bridging that. And typically, if they're in some place, you've got a detox period and then a 30-day inpatient. So when that runs out, like, where are they going? Mm-hmm. They're going to go back on the streets. They have no job. They have nothing. So the needs are tremendous. So from there, you need transitional housing, right? You need organizations that are working with them on getting their ID so that they can apply for jobs. Where have they worked before? Get some income, move them out of transitional housing into maybe a halfway house or a shared home, or get a room. And then, you know, everything. I mean, they first coming out, they could have nothing. They need clothes.
Yeah.
You know, getting them getting them medical insurance. I mean, all of that. It's starting all over again.
And then you
have the legal system. So they have criminal charges and, you know, and thank goodness in Florida, you know, we have the Safe Harbor Act. So anybody that's been arrested for prostitution, so to speak, under the age of 18 will not have a criminal record. And isn't it crazy to know that that's not in every state?
It is crazy.
There are states out there that our minors are getting arrested for prostitution and they have a record. Yeah.
Florida is leading the United States with anti-trafficking work.
Yes, absolutely. So those are a lot of the needs. And then in many cases, they really need to get transitioned into a long-term program. So they come out of a detox, you know, they may go into transitional housing, but if they're not ready to integrate in and try to get employment, work through a halfway house, you know, if we're working with the task force, there's resources for victims of human trafficking to support academic scholarships, get them really, you know, get them on a path that they really want to go on. If they're not ready to do that, then we're looking at programs anywhere in the country that could be 12 months to 16 month programs.
Okay.
There's a lot of beautiful faith-based programs all over the country that will receive these women and really do the long-term work that needs to be done.
Do you notice how, because I know you mentioned, for example, even like the drug detox, that is something that's even hard for people who haven't been trafficked to do. So have you noticed like a difficulty in having like a conversation like that with a survivor in regards to that being a part of her healing journey?
It's extremely difficult. I'll tell you, we were out on the streets in Lake Worth. Some people on the podcast will know where that is. We did two different street outreaches and we met eight different women.
Wow.
And six of those mm-hmm. eight were active drug users. One called the next day, said, "I'm ready." And we arranged for a pickup and she was gone. So we don't get discouraged. We know it's God's time. We're an opportunity for hope. We're not going away when she's ready. But it can take quite a while. I can tell you another story. We had met a woman on the western part of the county. And the last time I had seen her, we'd seen her a couple times. We'd prayed with her, gave her a hygiene bag. Several times we saw her, she was completely wasted, probably didn't even remember seeing us. But the last time I noted contact with this individual was in August of 2022. Roughly now, it's about a month and a half ago, my phone rang. And it was her. And she said, "Charm ready."
Wow.
Yeah. And we picked her up.
Wow.
And she went through the detox. She went through the inpatient. She's now at a halfway house. She's working with a wonderful partner, Becky Diamond, who runs Lighthouse PBC. She has a job. She just got a car gifted to her.
Wow.
She's getting dental work done.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. So
amazing.
It's in their time, you know. It's
and that it, I mean that's a whole year in saying yes. It took her a year to say I'm ready.
Yes. Yep.
And the thing is,
that's okay. We're not going anywhere.
No, that's amazing. And the thing is that I think from taking a step back, for those who don't understand trauma, they don't realize why people stay or why they seem to not want to get better, per se. And the thing with trauma is that, or better, I will let you explain it. Why do you think there is that contemplation and not an immediate yes when it comes to getting help?
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you, I'm not on the therapy side. I'm not a licensed mental health counselor. We work with partners that probably will do a much better job at answering that. But I can tell you my experience is that it's fear. Mm. It's like they're so fearful. It's like they'd rather stay with the enemy they know than step into fear of the unknown. That's one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is that this, we'll just term it trafficker, which again could be somebody related to the family, could be someone befriending them as their boyfriend who is not. They turn him out, and that's who their Romeo pimp is. It could be a gang member, could be organized crime, could be any of those things. They have a quota. They want the money, but they're also the ones that are feeding them. They're also the ones who will take them to get their nails done, you know? So one day they'll treat them like a princess, and the next day they may beat them horribly. They have to go to the hospital. So it's like, how do you leave the person that is your survival, even though they abuse you? It's kind of like, Jessica, when you think about it, you know, domestic abuse, right? Mm-hmm. And say, why do women and men, because sometimes men are the victims of domestic abuse, why can't they leave that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's there's a similar link there. Of course, within human trafficking, it's much more traumatic, in my opinion, just because of the repeated trauma that occurs. But, you know, without disclosing too much, we were working with a woman who, and this is a sad story, we worked with her for a good while, actually worked with her so that she ended up keeping a baby, did not abort the baby, gave it up for adoption, had a wonderful experience with that, which 2 times prior didn't make that choice, tons of shame, but would not go into a facility. So there was teams of people working with this individual, drug issues, medical issues, pregnant, ends up again, beautiful, had the baby, the foster parents send her pictures. So blessing there, right? But at the end of the day, during that, because she wouldn't go into a program, in the midst of all of our support, her trafficker would still come and be the one that would take her food when she needed it. Mm. You know, he would be there. And that's all, it's all a part of the trick. You know, 100%. They make them dependent on them. That's why it's so important that these individuals get into a program. Mm-hmm. And that's why often victims need to be taken out of a community. You cannot even do the restoration work in the same community. You have to just get them out of there because their ties are so strong. So yeah, it's really, really hard.
I don't think people realize how, it's kind of funny because we assume like these, like people who are in a human trafficking situation that they're like not human in some way, because like even if you're not in a trafficking situation, you can have like codependency emotional things happening in your life, and you're like, you have to check yourself, you're like, oh, hold on. You know, so like, so it's so funny how like we assume that somehow they're different than us, that we don't have, you know, some people, if they don't have their Starbucks order correct, they are like, you know, like they, you know, where the type of, if someone gets cut off in traffic, ooh, rage right there, you know, or like, so what I'm trying to emphasize is how these are emotional people just like us who have feelings and thoughts, desires, hopes, dreams, needs, that are being exploited treated like animals. Like they're degraded to the point of not even, you know, like having dignity. That's how the traffickers view them. They're not even worthy of, you know, the level of exploitation is unbelievable for an 11-year-old, for a 4-year-old to go through, 20-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old, like whatever age. So, that's one of the things that, you know, consistently goes in my head of like, this person is just like me. It's just they're in the situation. Like they're human like me. They cry. They have tears. They have needs. So it's just really, it's really insane to understand and to grapple with the idea that there can be a lack of empathy when it comes to helping survivors, because I just don't, I think, you know, in our eyes view, we have put them to such a like far away from us, like, oh well, like I'm not them, right? You know, So,
yeah, and I think just to add on that, that's such a good point that I think as a culture, we have a heartbeat and empathy for the child. But once they turn 18, we just like, adults. It's now a choice. It wasn't a choice when they were 16 or 14, or it doesn't matter that, you know, they were, you know, raped by an uncle and,
and
because of that, and it was never healed. They became sexualized, and that's what happens. Unhealed early sexual trauma becomes sexualized behavior, and they're looking for the romance in all the wrong places. And you know what I mean?
100%.
But they're 18 now, so, you know, let's not worry about them anymore.
Exactly. It's so bizarre. I understand it's because you can see a little kid's face and the big eyes and you're like, oh my gosh. But you see a person that's, you know, might resemble 24. Someone. Yeah. Someone who it might resemble someone who cut you off in traffic. And then you're just like, meh. I'm like, get your life together. You know, like that's kind of, we have this, like our hearts need to be softened towards everyone. Like it's not about age, but I know I truly understand prevention though. Like I think it does start in the age when, you know, because we have to prevent people from becoming traffickers as well, you know? However, I'm so with you on the compassion side for adults as well.
Yeah. And I love what you just said. I'm going to share a story. I think it's important. So this was probably 6-7 years ago. We were doing internet outreach. This is when we were going onto the websites. And so we would make a call in and we could be talking to a girl and the trafficker would take the phone away. And I remember when we started doing this, we're like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do if they get on the phone with us, you know? And it was so clear what we were going to do. We're going to pray for them, right? Because what 5-year-old boy says he wants to grow up and sell a woman 10 times a day? What happened to him? So it started happening. It happened a couple times where, you know, and I remember one time I was on the call with the girl and he took the phone away. And of course the Lord just protects us and shields us. Cause I cannot even begin to say the words he was saying to me on your podcast.
No.
And
that's just, so hard. So brave. That's so hard.
Him, how can I pray for you? And he could not wrap his head around what I was saying. He finally thought I was saying, how could I pay for you? He thought I was looking to buy him, you know? And I'm like, no. And at the end of the conversation, he told me that he had an illness and he had a child he hadn't seen. Hmm. And you know what? I don't even know what I said, because you know what? In these moments, the Lord gives you the words, right?
Yeah.
But I couldn't agree with you more. We have to love people. We have to be the village. There's so much brokenness in the family structure, in the faith community, you know, and it's more important that our kid plays soccer at that age than gets involved in a faith community. You know what I mean? It's like we've got to really look at what we're doing.
Our priorities.
No,
and it's I think it's just goes back to talking about hard things. Because this topic of sex trafficking, breaking it down, you know, boundaries being, you know, lack of boundaries, or, you know, just someone being taken advantage of, things like that, is such a hard conversation that maybe is talked about like once a year, or, you know, you might hear it in a Bible study. It's not something we act like it's actually happening. We kind of assume like, oh, well, when they grow up, they'll deal with their trauma, or they'll deal with whatever happened to them. And it's not, I think this is a good time because of so much technology that we should be talking more about it, but it's a healing process, a careful process. And it's taking into consideration, you know, kind of like where people are and what they can handle. Baby steps. Because as you mentioned, you know, if someone has been hurt by their husband's, you know, cheating on them with a prostitute or things like that, that person needs healing as well. Yes. It's not, you know, it's very hard for that kind of person, like, to be empathetic for them, right. you know, and all right. that.
We're all in need of a savior, and we're in need of freedom that Christ gives us, and freedom and forgiveness. Amen. And that includes the prostitute, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it includes the pimp, because I know a lot of people don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
And you know, it is good news. There is, and that's where the church does step in. It's like, hey, like no matter what, Jesus can deliver you from any despair that you've experienced. If you failed a test, you know, I keep it like even to the littlest things, you know, he is there for us, and even for the big things and the littlest things. So I love that you guys are doing so much work. What kind of areas could we be praying for you guys?
So we are, you know, the process to become a nonprofit is a long, long process. And during the pandemic, it was just put on the back burner. We were already registered, incorporated in Florida as a charity at the, you know, state level nonprofit, but the federal process with the IRS. So we're just coming to the end of it. And that is going to just open up so many opportunities. So just I'm praying for, you know, just clarity on what to do with that provision. Mm-hmm. You know, becoming a nonprofit, you have to bring in board members. Actually, you incur a lot more costs, and they're not costs that, you know, oh, you're donating to these beauty bags or to housing. So we have emergency housing money. No, you might be donating because we need liability insurance or insurance, or we need somebody to manage our website, or, you know, there's huge administrative costs. And so just praying for, you know, resources in that area. And, you know, God has brought so much favor. You know, one of the, and I don't know if you're going to ask me questions on about the future of human trafficking.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I will hold off then. but I, you know, that I think, and really, for God,
you can jump onto it. What's the hope for the future for the anti-trafficking field?
It's really, you know, about collaboration. So, you know, one of the blessings here in Palm Beach County is there's a lot of collaboration. We actually have another organization, that I chair called Sharing One Love Palm Beach County. And it's really just simply a collaborative platform to bring everyone together, faith-based, government, you know, police, nonprofit, all in the same room and talk about what they do and what we can share with each other. And it's amazing because the last thing you want to do is be duplicating efforts. We need to all come together. And this is complicated. We've just hit the tip of the iceberg here. Everyone has a role. Everyone has a role. So it's about coming together, valuing each one in a role. And it's a role that happens in a community. Like you can't, you know, you have all those needs that I mentioned. Well, if you don't have those resources in an area that that person can get to, then it doesn't matter if they're, you know, halfway across town. So it's about addressing the issue locally and coming together. So number one, collaboration is so important. Number two is really keeping an open heart for survivors that have come out of that and give them a voice in this movement, right? They are a tremendous, like one of the things that God really put on my heart this year was, we think we know what we're doing. We think we got this in the hygiene bags, but you know, what about talking to some survivors? You know, so we started interviewing survivors. Fortunately, been doing this long enough, know many wonderful survivor leaders out there. And I just, you know, pinged them and, hey, do you have some survivors? And, you know, we certainly will pay a consulting fee to them. And just say, hey, somebody's walking up to you with a red bag. What are you thinking? What are you hoping's in the bag? What are you looking, you know, it's just getting their perspective, I think.
100%.
And it's something that is evolving in the industry. The, it's terrible to have that we have a human trafficking industry, but
we have a human trafficking industry. I think it's insane too. Like that it's so big that it's like, we have to, like people are actually working full time to try to end this. Like, it's insane to me. It's still insane. Like, I just can't, it's immeasurably crazy. But anyways, what's the response that you guys have received from even just asking, like, what do you want in the bag?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's given us ideas.
Okay.
You know, it's definitely given us ideas of things that we needed to add and just approach and just how much fear there is.
You know,
how much fear,
you know,
that they have. We're, you know, that we're looking to arrest them, that, you know, that we're going to report them to DCF because many have children. I mean, it's, it's just fear. So yeah, it's been really valuable to us.
You know, that example, like how you're like, we need to reach out to people who are actually like have been there. It reminds me of like someone, like I have naturally curly hair. And it's like, if someone who has straight hair, naturally pin straight hair, was to come to me and say, hey, you know, use this product that I use for my hair, it's and use it on your hair, and it's gonna work and it's gonna look great. And I'm like, but that doesn't work for my hair.
Right, right.
So I would feel like, okay, like I'm getting this gift, but thank you. But I see the heart behind it, but I also, it's not like, like I can't use it.
Yeah.
So I completely understand. I like hear the survivors, what they're saying and the needs and everything. They definitely need a bigger platform, which is important, because they are all going to have different stories too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to contribute a little bit differently,
mm-hmm,
to the conversation. So yeah. You were talking about, so collaboration you're looking for in the future, and then, yeah, giving survivors a platform.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you see?
Practically just praying for, we need a safe house for adult women. We have certain partners here in Palm Beach County that provide housing, blessed about that. Most of them cap at about the age of 24. We do not have an operating safe house here in Palm Beach County. And we have partners that you can transfer them to elsewhere, but there's some times where they don't want to leave because they have kids. Their parents may have their child. They part of their vision is, I want to be back with my family, right? Can you help me get back there? So to take them out into another area doesn't always make sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, just really providing for praying for and hoping for provision for that.
And you mentioned the transitional housing, how important it is, because they need that recovery time,
mm-hmm,
in, mm-hmm, between like getting stable, whether it's obviously from the drugs, but also from just being able to find out who they are again after all the things that they went through. How long does it take us to figure out who we are, getting our life? You know, everyone's on a journey, right? And we have to realize that there is so much they need. You know, there's a little bit of extra tenderness and needs that they have because, mm-hmm, of all the trauma they're experiencing day after day after day. And I did have one quick question. Have you noticed if there has been a pattern when it comes to how long someone has been in that lifestyle to when they process through the healing? Because I know healing is a lifetime, but I also think, like, for example, like what you mentioned, like, oh, are they ready to start a new job right away? Or, you know, have you noticed anything like that?
No. And I, you know, as I mentioned, we're on the front end. So we don't do long-term case management. We have a few girls that we're still kind of overseeing. That's probably, you know, a question for somebody that's doing the case management side to say how long that therapeutic path might be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even you are always referencing us, right? Like people that don't have that trauma, like you may go through therapy and then you think you're okay. And then you pick up the suitcase again and then you're back in therapy. Right. So
100%.
Now, again, it's a long process.
Yeah.
It's a long process. Definitely.
Awesome. There's a resilience in there. Human spirit is resilient.
Yes.
Yes. It's amazing. So as a woman of faith, as you mentioned, how has your passion for the Lord really fueled your work for Rescue Upstream?
Yeah, this is definitely a burden from him. To me, you know, we're talking about all these like support and resources and partners and what they need. What they need is Jesus Christ, right?
Wow, yeah.
So
100%.
There's nobody, there's nothing that brings freedom like the Lord, right? With freedom, you can choose to live out of the tree of life, right? And that's mm-hmm. God's word about you, right? And once you experience that and that freedom, you know, no matter what it is, it doesn't even matter. It can be freedom from shame, from unforgiveness, from the consequences of bad choices. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. When you experience that freedom, you're like, that's real. Mm-hmm. And then you experience the Holy Spirit.
Talk about the Holy Spirit.
There's nothing that comes close to that. So,
yes.
I mean, I can't even tell you that, like, all the confirmations. It's like at some point I just laugh at them. I'm like, okay, I knew you were going to show up and answer that. You know, I wasn't expecting it that way. But what that means is it's real. It's tangible. And that is what we want to give them hope for,
amen.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything else is just it's the hands and feet. Mm-hmm. It's the practical stuff.
Yeah.
But what we want, oh my gosh. There's a girl that we've been working with. We picked her up off the streets again in Lake Worth. She was about ready to jump off one of the bridges.
Oh, wow.
Horrible, horrible. And she's been a lot of places. It's been a long haul, but we were able to integrate her in and also in an early foster care environment. This goes back to how mm-hmm. we have to seed our children, right? With faith, because even though she mm-hmm. had it and everything fell apart, horrible trauma on the streets, homeless 15 years, it was seeded
wow.
in there, bringing her into a mm-hmm. worship event one night. She felt the Spirit mm-hmm. and she received it and she was able to relinquish certain things right there.
Wow.
And she's still continuing in her path. She's now at a place in the Lord. She's all the way across the country, but the Lord has brought her somebody else and they're in a Bible study and she's talking about the Holy Spirit and he's going to give her power. And I mean, it's
100%.
That's it. That's yeah. it, because it's not what we're doing.
Amen.
You know, that's the whole thing. And that's what we're praying about a lot is when we're out on the streets.
Wow.
You know, some of these people have pushed away God. They don't even believe in God.
100%.
You know, yeah. We don't want to alienate them. Listen, I was a non-believer most of my life.
Wow.
And God yeah. is never.
It's crazy.
I can remember what it was like. I can remember when somebody would say to me, oh, I'm going to pray for you. You know how that would make me feel? I'd get angry, right?
Probably.
Or they'd say, I'd say, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. And they'd say, well, God, to God be the glory. I'm like, what? You worked your butt off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, and so that isn't gone for me. And so I am so clear as we're talking to these girls, not to just put that right in front of them right away. But with that said, to ask the Lord to give us his eyes, his ears, for those that are ready to receive the gospel. Because if we can pray with them and they can accept Christ, hey, we're leaving yeah. them with some power, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a seed.
That reminds me of a story. I was watching a video and there was a girl, she was reaching, she does the same, like she reaches out, she does street ministry. She goes out just to pray. And it was, I think it was in Miami in Wynwood. And she was talking to a lady who had a scar and she asked her like, hey, where, how'd you get that scar? And, I think the lady had been in a domestic violence situation. Like she had, like she almost died and she had this crazy scar or something. And like, so, she's like, hey, you know, like, let's just pray. I don't know if she had any pain or if it was just the scar. Or I think she had pain in her body. So what happened was they prayed for her and when they looked, the scar disappeared.
Wow.
So it was this lady just broke down, like crying, because she was like, it was a constant reminder to me mm-hmm. about all the things that happened to me, like what this mm-hmm. guy did to me and everything. And yes. the fact that God's grace, like it went away mm-hmm. is, I mean, it's a miracle. First off, it's a miracle. Yeah. But I was mm-hmm. watching that and I was like, he cares about the details of our life, that our feelings matter to him. And like the power of prayer and the Holy Spirit and stuff is so important. So I love that you said that. And I do think it's a really hard conversation, because when you are talking to someone, you're like, I don't know what you know, if you don't know what they believe in, you're like,
yeah,
I can't use like that religious terminology, you know, or.
Right. Oh, right. No. Right. No. And we're always, again, we pray for his ears and his words, right? His words are perfect, not our words.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. I know we're coming to an hour and 15 minutes. This has been an amazing, you know, I've learned so much from you, and I'm very excited even for, I know you guys have some events coming up mm-hmm. We have December and January. Yes. Can you just share some of the details on that?
Sure, sure. Well, we have a fundraiser in December at the Wine Cellar on Gateway in Boynton Beach. And that is on December the 13th. Okay. And it's a wonderful opportunity to meet our team, get more information, maybe buy some wine for holiday gifts, enjoy some hors d'oeuvres. And again, it's a fundraiser for Rescue Upstream. In January, and many people may know, January is National Human Trafficking Awareness and Prevention Month. Community of Hope Church on Military Trail will be hosting on Saturday, January 20th, an event. And it starts at 1 p.m. It'll probably go till about 4 p.m. We will be showing the documentary Shattered Dreams, Sex Trafficking in America. That'll be followed by a panel discussion. I will be participating in the panel, local law enforcement, one of our partners that also works in the field of human trafficking and a survivor will be on the panel. And then we'll have the entire community of providers mm-hmm. out in the lobby for you to connect with so that you might take your next step. And it isn't about any one group. It's about really praying about where God calls you to step in.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. So you guys are going to have law enforcement there too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to talk about just what their experience has been, or kind of like the training that they've done.
Yes.
That's amazing. So I love it. So we're praying for you guys to be federally registered as a nonprofit. So right now you guys are like the state registration. I didn't even know that there was a distinction. I thought it was this like, I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. So we're right around the corner. We're monitoring the review dates of when they're reviewing submissions, and they just hit our submission date. So we're thinking, you know, 3 weeks. I mean, we're really, really, really close.
Oh my gosh.
That's
so
super,
cool.
Super exciting.
So there's going to be an explosion. That's awesome. Okay. Awesome. Do you have any last words for the audience?
I would say everyone can make a difference. And I just want to talk a bit about that. We've touched upon, it's just kind of like highlight, you know, as a parent, you can really be aware of how to protect your child from exploitation that could lead to something that's really awful. As a parent or somebody that works with children or even engaged in the community, you know, caring for grandchildren, you can take a step to understand how to prevent child sexual abuse. There are so many organizations that have volunteer needs, all different kinds of volunteer needs. You know, some of them are, you know, people that can do social media that would organize, you know, fundraisers that maybe do an outreach, like with the community outreach or you know, get a service team together and create, you know, hygiene bags or beauty bags. There's all different kinds of things. If you're a professional person, you can consider coming on and being a provider to victims. And it doesn't mean you have to provide services to, you know, everybody, you know, but you could say, hey, you know, I'm a professional person and I will provide free services to one victim a quarter or a year. And you can define what that is. And it's really, it's a changer because, you know, we have some county subsidized programs that these girls can go to. But think about it. Think about the experience you have when you go to your private place, a dentist, a doctor, a therapist, or whatever. You know, it's a very different experience. And so we're really calling on everyone in the community to consider, how can I be a part of it? Hey, can I offer an internship? Do I have a scholarship? Can I do a part-time a job? I mean, all of those things. We just had somebody that came on board that certifies therapy dogs. I mean, who would have thought that? You know, so there's all kinds of things. Just pray about, you know, what am I doing? Where am I gifting? Where am I working? And can I come into that? If your gifting is financial, there's a lot of organizations that would welcome a financial, you know, donation. And then, of course, prayer. This is absolutely a spiritual battle. There's just no doubt about it. You know, we've seen it. It's so funny. When we launched 10 years ago, we sat down with the lead pastors, and that was one of the things, you know, meeting us, and we're like all on fire. We're going to do this, right? We're going to do this. And they had to say, listen, you need to sit down and understand what you're doing.
Yes.
And how the enemy is not going to like that. And so, you know,
have you read Nehemiah?
Armor of God on, right?
Yes.
We have a whole other discussion about the armor of God, yes. Right?
But it reminds me so much about Nehemiah and the building of the wall, because he had enemies coming against the work and they would continuously discourage him, distract him. And he had to be like, hey guys, like he had to be consistently actually, you know, either directly say, hey, I'm working on the wall, or he had to say, hey, like he had to reinforce and encourage the people to continue working because they had to work now being vigilant that they might be attacked. So they had to work with a shovel in one hand and then like ready to battle and the next. Right. So it's so true. It's a battle. And I think, and it is hard. It's a dark one, but that's where you have to be continuously, you know, in community, I think, and also in prayer individually too.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I love what you've shared. It's been so much. If anyone has any questions additionally, please reach out to Gal Restore on Instagram and we can follow up with Char. And I think that everyone should consider jotting down on their calendars. So we have December 17th.
December 13th.
December 13th. And yes. January 20th.
January 20th.
We're already hitting that new year mark, yeah. Almost. Yes. Hitting the holidays. So thank you everyone for listening. We appreciate you. And thank you so much, Char, for being here, for sharing all the knowledge, experience that you bring to the table. Continue just doing an amazing work, and we'll cover you in prayer because you are a warrior on the street. Like, it's so cool. And thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.